Hey guys, Bill here. Just in case you haven't been listening to the Nickel Package this year, which is the daily NFL podcast we do, I host the Wednesday episode. Mina and Dominique, frequent guests on this show, the Bill Barnwell Show, host the Thursday edition, Field Yates on Monday. We wanted to publish today's episode in the Bill Barnwell Show feed just so you can get a chance to listen to what we've been doing. It's a little more focused on teams as opposed to the league as a whole. So today you're going to hear Doug Kide, who's been a guest on my show in the past, talk about the Patriots for 20 minutes, and then we're going to have Jeff Schwartz, guest on my show as well. He's going to focus on the Chiefs. So another chance to hear some people you hear on the show typically, maybe a little more focused on one particular team as opposed to the league as a whole. We do rotate the teams, of course, every single week, but usually that's what we do, have a couple of different people talking about things a little more specifically. So it could be fun. Give it a shot. And as always, more Bill Barnwell Show coming later on this week. But thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Nickel Package. Welcome to today's episode of The Nickel Package. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Here on Wednesday, November 29th, 2017. And today, we're going to talk about two teams who are heading in two very different directions. Kansas City Chiefs, of course, beat the New England Patriots in week one of the NFL season, the opener of this NFL campaign. Got off to a hot start. They're now struggling. We're going to get to them a little later on in the show with Jeff Schwartz, former NFL offensive lineman. But first, let's talk about a team that appears to be on the up and up. And who could have expected the Patriots would get off to a slow start before riding the ship and suddenly looking a lot better, especially on the defensive side of the ball as the season goes on? And joining us to discuss that is NESN writer Doug Kide. Doug, you are someone in the past who's been very much in the let's chill when discussing the Patriots' defense mold, and it appears for the at least the second year in a row that you were correct to do so.
Yeah, Patriots fans are very overreactionary at times because I think that they expect just 100% success at all times, which is to be expected when your team is usually like that. But yeah, for the last couple of years, defense has started a little bit slow, and this year, I would say that I even kind of started to give up hope on them a little bit early in the season because they were just so bad. When you are legitimately the worst defense in the NFL, then it's hard to really stick up for that unit without yourself looking like a moron. But maybe I should have held my ground a little bit more because now I think since week five, they are the top scoring against defense, points allowed defense in the NFL, which is quite impressive.
Yeah, for sure. 14 points to the Bucs, 17 to the Jets, 7 to the Falcons, 13 to the Chargers, 16 to the Broncos, 8 to the Raiders, and then 17 to the Dolphins last Sunday in the 35-17 blowout victory of Miami. And I think that included a defensive touchdown as well, no?
It did, yes. A fumble return for a touchdown when Ted Karras snapped it and Tom Brady was not expecting it.
That seems like it's a bad thing to do. If you can make Tom Brady look bad, I feel like that's a dangerous it's a dangerous way to play things. Now, obviously, I'm going to ask you the simple question, and I'm sure it's a complicated answer, but let's start with just the broadest possible explanation. What's changed from the defense that started off looking so bad against Kansas City, New Orleans, Houston, and Carolina?
To simplify it as much as possible, I would say that the communication breakdowns have completely disappeared, and that was really the biggest problem over those first four weeks of the season was that no one really seemed to know what their defensive counterparts were doing on a given play, and a lot of those communication problems seemed to surround Stephon Gilmore. They started to go away in week five when Stephon Gilmore was basically just assigned to cover Mike Evans, and that's it. And there weren't a lot of communication breakdowns. Patriots defense obviously played a lot better against Evans. Then Stephon Gilmore sat out the next 3 weeks. The defense kept rolling on well without him, but now he's returned for the past three games, and the defense continues to play well. But the common thread here is that Stephon Gilmore continues to just cover one wide receiver every week. Against the Broncos, it was Demaryius Thomas. Against the Raiders, it was Michael Crabtree. And then against the Dolphins, it was Devontae Parker. So I think the real question is, how will this defense look when it's not overly simplified for Stephon Gilmore? And not to get too far ahead of ourselves here, the Patriots are playing a very mobile quarterback this week, and I'm not sure if they'll really be able to just stick with a man coverage and say, hey, Stephon Gilmore, cover one wide receiver. I would assume that they will need to use more zone this week. So will those communication breakdowns continue, Or will the defense continue to play well with Stephon Gilmore having to communicate? I guess we'll just kind of have to see. But I would say that the communication breakdowns are the number one reason why the Patriots defense was struggling. And the fact that they've gone away is why they've played so well.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like within that coverage, when they have Stephon Gilmore playing man-on-one receiver, he's done a pretty good job so far. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, that's definitely fair to say. His best game of the season was definitely against the Dolphins. He was targeted three times. He led up a five-yard catch, which was, I think, like the first play of the game for the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. And then his next two targets were intercepted. He intercepted one of them, and Daron Harmon, and he basically collided for an interception on the second one, which Daron Harmon yanked away from Gilmore once they were on the ground so that they could both get theirs in the game. But definitely a very strong performance for him against the Dolphins, and almost equally strong against the Broncos and the Raiders. He did let up a touchdown against the Broncos, but it was a really good catch by Demaryius Thomas. Mm-hmm. Gilmore actually got his hand in on the play, but Thomas still was able to pull it away. And against the Raiders, he did allow the two-point conversion, but otherwise pretty much blanked Thomas and Crabtree in those 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to be the negative Nancy here. It's not the role I want to play here on the nickel package, but let me just throw this out there, play devil's advocate. You look at the seven teams they've played on during this winning streak, there's not a lot of great offenses here. Sure, the Falcons, I think, are a very solid unit. They have been pretty good, especially over the past few weeks. I look at they're kind of rounding into form. But you look at the other teams they've played, the Bucks, the Jets, the Chargers, who I guess are okay, but Bucks, Jets, Broncos, Raiders, Dolphins, that includes two backup quarterbacks in Denver and Miami, I believe. So is it fair to wonder if they're going to be able to keep this up against tougher competition when they do play, for example, in 2 weeks, the Steelers on December 17th?
I think it's definitely fair to wonder. I would say that they probably wouldn't be ranked first in the NFL in points allowed since week five if they were playing better offenses. But I know it was before they really came on strong, but the Patriots defense did pretty well against the Saints in week two.
Yeah,
and last year, the number one complaint about the Patriots defense was that they hadn't played a good quarterback throughout basically the entire season. And I'm not sure if you can really say the same thing about them this year, because they have played Matt Ryan. They have played Phillip Rivers. And, you know, I guess you would throw Derek Carr into the mix last year. You would have said, oh, they played a good quarterback last year in Derek Carr. This year, it's been a little bit different, but at least they've been playing better offenses this year than they did last year, and especially better quarterbacks than they did last year. And they have been able to prove it against some teams, whereas last year it really was them playing bottom of the barrel offenses week after week after week. I think that Pittsburgh game will absolutely be a big test for the Patriots defense. I don't expect them to limit the Steelers to 14 points or 17 points, but I do think that as long as injuries don't ravage them before then, they will be competitive in that game.
Are injuries more of a concern with the Patriots heading into the final 5 weeks of the year than they have been in years past?
Yeah, I think so. Just because, you know, when you're not playing with Dante Hightower and you're not playing with Julian Edelman, there's just less room for error for your team in general. And, you know, there was a major scare last week against the Dolphins when, in the fourth quarter, Trey Flowers got hurt and Kyle Van Noy got hurt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those might not have been the names that you would throw out there as being the most irreplaceable players on the defense at the beginning of the season. But when you've gone through Dante Hightower, who's gone, you've gone through, like, every pass rusher the Patriots have basically brought in has got hurt at some point or retired, whether it's Rob Ninkovich or Derek Rivers or Cassius Marsh didn't work out. If they had been without Kyle Van Noy and Trey Flowers for a long stretch of the season, then you'd be talking about them basically having rookies as pass rushers. Mm-hmm. It seems like the Patriots were able to dodge a bullet there. Kyle Van Noy and Trey Flowers both did practice today, so that's a good sign for their status coming up. But you can't help but think that this defense is, you know, maybe even one injury away from potentially combusting, especially there in the front seven at the edges, because behind Kyle Van Noy and Trey Flowers, there's not a lot there as far as pass rushers can go.
Mm-hmm. Is Van Noy the most surprising player on this team so far this year?
He's definitely up there. I might put Adrian Waddle above him as far as most surprising players, because he basically has stepped up for Marcus Cannon, and there's been very little drop-off. I don't think that anyone really expected that to happen there at right tackle, but mm-hmm. Van Noy has definitely been a very pleasant surprise because he started off the season pretty poorly, especially in run defense. He wasn't really able to get off blocks, but then once Hightower got hurt, Patriots moves Kyle Van Noy to that outside linebacker, edge rusher role, the one that he kind of played at BYU, mm-hmm. and he's really thrived in that role. He has 5.5 sacks. He's been playing well, setting the edge against the run. When he's asked to cover, he's done pretty good at that as well. He's not getting the same type of pass rush production that Dante Hightower usually gets in this defense, but mm-hmm. there are very few linebackers who can do that on a snap-by-snap basis, and I think that Van Noy has filled in very admirably in that Dante Hightower, Rob Ninkovich, Mike Vrabel role that's been in this defense for so long.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised when the Patriots did decide to cut Cassius Marsh?
Yes, because they gave up so much for him. They gave up a 5th-round pick and a 7th-round pick, which, I mean, even at the time, I was thinking, is this like a different Cassius Marsh? is this a Cassius Marsh who's going to be playing every snap? Because, I mean, that might not seem like a lot to give up for a player, but for 1 year of Cassius Marsh, that seems like a lot. Mm-hmm. But he never really fit in there that well into this defense. He had a really, really, really hard time setting the edge against the run. In the game right before he was released, he was on the field for 2 plays, and that was a 25-yard run and a 7-yard run that was good for a first down. So I think in my notes for that game on the 25-yard run, my note was just, expletive Marsh, which is never good. Not in a too demeaning way, but it was just frustration. I think he could never really set the edge there, and he was just way too skinny to play that outside linebacker defensive end role in the Patriots defense. I think he was listed at 245, but when you saw him in the locker room, he was a pretty skinny guy, and it wasn't that big of a surprise that he wasn't powerful enough to do that.
What about the sleeves, though?
Yeah, I mean, he was a tough-looking guy. I will say that. Very nice guy, too. I felt bad that it was never able to work out for him here.
You're familiar with his Magic the Gathering story, right?
I am. That's very, very unfortunate as well. He got his Magic card stolen, right?
Very sad. Very sad in Seattle. He had his Magic the Gathering cards thieved away.
Thieved away, and then, I feel like there's a joke to make here about how he got his lunch stolen by every rushing offense that went after him or something. I don't know.
Do you think they were taunting him perhaps on the way back to the huddle? Running backs after big games were taunting him with, you know, how they had his magic cards.
I would love to make some sort of reference to Magic the Gathering, like, but I just don't know enough about it.
Don't
they have like some sort of like points or power or something on these cards? I think it's
a mana-based system.
Ooh, maybe, yeah. So I stole your mana or something. Yeah.
If it was Pogs, I feel like I'd have much more of a basis to talk about the topic at hand. Switching sides to the offensive side of the ball, in terms of this running back situation, it seems like it's gone in every single direction over the course of the year. We started off with Mike Gillisley playing the biggest role, and now he is pretty much the fourth back in this four-back rotation, it seems like. Do you think it's kind of settled this way and it's going to stay this way for the remainder of the season? Or are we going to get to the conference finals and James White's going to be, you know, playing 75% of the snaps again for some reason?
I wouldn't be surprised by that. I think that it's settled for now, and that's that Deion Lewis is really that bell cow between the tackles runner. Rex Burkhead is the versatile guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield and run between the tackles. And then James White, one of the biggest surprises of the season is the fact that his role has dwindled so much, because he is the highest paid running back on this roster on a per year basis. They signed him to a contract extension before the season. He was obviously the Super Bowl hero. And I could see that coming back on, you know, maybe the game plan calls for James White to catch 11 passes one game, but you can see why the Patriots are using the running backs the way they are right now, just because Deion Lewis and Rex Burkhead are so much more versatile than James White or Mike Gillisley. Mike Gillisley doesn't have a catch on the season. James White has never been a ball carrier, really. He's really always been much better as a pass catcher. There's not a threat when he's on the field. The Patriots are going to run the ball down the opposing team's throat. And there is when Dion Lewis and when Rex Burkhead are on the field, and both of those guys can catch the ball out of the backfield as well. So I think those are the two best running backs on this team, just as far as versatility goes, as far as carrying the ball goes. And maybe there's, you know, a slight drop off in the pass catching skills between James White and Dion Lewis, but he's just, Lewis is just a much more valuable runner, and he does still possess the ability to catch the ball. So I think that this is what you should expect moving forward, but don't be shocked if James White has that, you know, 9 or 10 catch game, whether it's against the Steelers or whether it's in the playoffs, because he does still obviously possess that ability, and Tom Brady does still trust him quite a bit.
Certainly seems like it. What's going on with Chris Hogan?
He made an appearance at practice today, and I saw him in the locker room yesterday. He finally did not have a sling on his shoulder, which was a very good sign. And today it looked like he probably wasn't going to be a participant in practice, but he was at least going onto the field with a helmet in hand. So he was going to do something on the practice field. So probably wouldn't expect him back this week against his former team in the Bills, but maybe by the time the Patriots are playing the Steelers, maybe by the time the Patriots are playing the Dolphins, another former team of his, he will be back out there. So I think we're getting close there. There's some signs of progress, but I'm not sure if he's quite ready to come back this week.
Missing out on some valuable Chris Hogan revenge game opportunities here.
I know. I mean, he would have had four potential revenge games in 5 weeks.
Oh boy!
And now we're really down to just two of them. So that is quite a shame. I would have liked to see some 7-Eleven revenge out there.
It's got to be eating him up. You know, there had to be a big opportunity there for him to take on the Niners, take on the Dolphins, the Bills, but we will see in the weeks to come. In terms of Rob Gronkowski, I mean, obviously the big news in a way is that he's healthy. He's or at least healthy enough to stay on the field. He has not missed a game. He's missed one game this year. Is that true? But it's
one
not
game.
That's not missed a game since week 5, 9. When was their bye?
Week nine was their bye.
Yeah. So yeah. He missed a game in week 5 and has been back ever since. Do you think he's the same guy we saw in previous years? Like, do you think he, when he wants to be, he can be as dominant as he's been at points in years past?
That's a really good question, Bill. Not completely. I don't feel like he's been 100% Gronk, but it is really close. I would say that he's like, you know, 95-96%, somewhere around there. He hasn't been the dominant force that he has been on a week-to-week basis every game this year. But, I mean, he certainly has shown flashes. He had a really good game last week against the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. He's definitely had some impressive weeks. He's still probably the best tight end in the NFL. So it's not like he's dropped off too much, but I think that there's either something holding him back, or maybe the Patriots are holding him back, or something where he's not putting up those, you know, 100-yard, 2-touchdown performances every other week like we've come to expect out of him.
So final 5 weeks of the year coming, Patriots are 9-2. Obviously look to be in great shape to win the division title for the 174th time under Bill Belichick. What's the most important thing that has to happen over the final 5 weeks of the year for the Patriots? Is it that Gronk stays healthy? Is it that Stephon Gilmore becomes a bigger part of the defensive system as a whole? Is it that they have to go 5-0 and finish with the first seed in the AFC? I mean, if you could have one thing as a Patriots fan that you could take with you to the playoffs that you could guarantee right now, what do you think it would be?
I might even just say keeping Tom Brady healthy, because he seems more banged up in the last couple of years than he has been throughout the rest of his career. He wasn't out of practice again today. I think the fact that he said on two different radio appearances on Monday that he was feeling pretty sore, that's not usually what you come to expect to hear out of Tom Brady. He usually really downplays any health issues that he has. He was listed on the injury report last week with the Achilles. I'm not sure if that will be the same injury that we see him on the injury report with today for missing practice. But, I mean, I don't think that they need to manage his snaps or anything. I just think that the offensive line needs to do a better job of protecting him, keeping him upright, keeping him healthy. Because, I mean, with the way the AFC is this year, I think that you would need a Tom Brady injury for the Patriots to not be in that AFC championship mix. I think that you know, obviously a Rob Gronkowski injury would be terrible. Obviously, like a Trey Flowers injury would be terrible. But I think as long as Brady is healthy, they will absolutely be in that AFC Championship game, and they will not be there if Brian Hoyer is the quarterback. So I think that's really the key moving forward, is to protect Tom Brady as much as possible, keep him healthy, because if he's healthy there in the AFC Championship game, the Patriots are probably heading to another Super Bowl.
Last question for you, Doug. Our mutual friend Charlotte Wilder wrote a piece for SB Nation about Tom Brady's Instagram, and featured in many of his Instagram posts is a mysterious crocodile. So, Doug, yes. I want to know what you think. What does the crocodile represent in Tom Brady's Instagram?
My theory is that it's his body coach, Alex Guerrero.
Really?
But Tom Brady's not talking today because he didn't practice. He's talking on Friday, and usually on Fridays there is less media here at Gillette Stadium to ask Tom Brady questions. And the crocodile in the TB Times is probably not the question that I'm going to be screaming over local TV news reporters to ask Tom Brady a question about. But if it's a Friday and there's not many people around, I might try to ask Tom Brady what that crocodile represents on there and see what the man himself has to say, because I'm probably not quite as curious as our mutual friend Charlotte Wilder, but I am curious to know what that crocodile represents. And by the way, my theory is that Charlotte, the one who wrote about that, is actually the one who's doing all of the drawings. I think this is just a big scheme on her part.
Interesting yeah. theory. Well, a casual Friday is about to become Crocodile Friday at the Patriots facility. Doug Kide, where can people check out more of your work?
Go to nesson.com for all of my writing. Follow me on Twitter at Doug Kide. My last name is spelled K-Y-E-D. And yeah, that's about it. Check me out there.
Doug, thanks so much.
Absolutely. It was fun. Anytime.
All right. Thanks so much, Doug. We're going to come back and talk about the Chiefs with Jeff Schwartz after the break. All right. Welcome back to today's episode of the Nickel Package. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. I'm joined now to discuss the Kansas City Chiefs by the Internet Zone. I feel like I can't say one site, all around the Internet. One of the finest follows on all of Twitter, Jeff Schwartz, former NFL offensive lineman. Mr. Schwartz, how are you?
It's funny you mentioned all of them in there, because the other day someone said the only reason I'm relevant is because of my brother, so who plays for the Chiefs, mind you. So I listed out everybody that I work for, and I listed out like 8 people, and then I forgot to add like 2 other ones. So I basically, if you have a media company, you employ me as a contractor at some point.
Yes.
That's the way it works.
I find it interesting that you managed to get drafted into the NFL strictly based on your brother's merits when he was still in college.
I mean, should it be the other way around? Should it be that he got drafted because I was a 7th-round draft pick? I mean, maybe that's the way it should work. And I led the way for him to start 51 games at Cal and be a 2nd-round draft pick. But he should pay me for that.
You led the way for him to go to the Chiefs. Plain and simple.
I like to think that. I think they just decided they need a really good right tackle to go in that division and just found the best one available and took him.
Well, we have a lot to talk about when it comes to the Chiefs, because they are struggling mightily. As you mentioned in your article on them at SB Nation earlier this week, started 5-0. They were averaging over 30 points per game. And last 6 games, they are 1-5. And they look every bit of 1-5. And it does seem like the offense is the problem there, as opposed to the defense. And there's been calls for Alex Smith to be benched. There's been calls for, I don't know, the offense to change somehow. So let's just start with the broadest question, and we'll kind of break it down from there. Jeff, what's wrong with the Chiefs offense right now?
Well, they're just not functioning at a high level like they were the first 5 weeks. And part of that is Alex Smith. Yes, Alex Smith looks jittery in the pocket. Mm-hmm. He looks to have his confidence shot. He's not throwing the ball at certain times where guys are open. And that needs to improve. And if you looked at him the first 5 weeks, you looked at a player that was very confident. He had a great pocket to throw from. There were guys open everywhere. He was throwing the ball downfield. He was throwing the ball in rhythm. You know, he's a guy getting up in age where, you know, he's always been sort of limited, I would say, with some skills, right? He doesn't have an Aaron Rodgers arm. You know, he can actually move pretty well, He's not going to be a top tier quarterback. So he kind of needs things to be perfect. And you know, that includes the run game that struggled too. So just from Alex's perspective, he looks like he's not playing very confidently from the running game, which a lot of people want to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it looks like there's a different guy screwing up every play on the offensive line. So one play it's the left guard, one play it's the right guard, one play it's the center. And this happens a lot of times with good enough offensive line. The Chiefs are good enough talent-wise, mm-hmm. But they, you know, new guy screws up every play. This happened to the Cowboys early in the year. It's happened to the Raiders as well. It's typically not a function of everyone being bad. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, more on the run game front, just the communication up front has been poor. In the Bills game, they let the middle linebacker run through on a zone play. I mean, that's unacceptable mm-hmm. to not know who that guy is. There's various other times where there's linebackers sitting in the hole because the front has been ID'd wrong. And that type of stuff is unacceptable. You can understand the physical mistakes, sure, right? You know, you're going to get beat. You're going to have bad technique from time to time. But just knowing who you're supposed to block, to me, is unacceptable. I know they feel the same way about that. So there's a lot of issues on this offense. And one thing that's not talked about is that, look, the Chiefs have Tyreek Hill. They have Travis Kelce. That's it. It's not like they have this plethora of weapons. And while mm-hmm. Tyreek Hill, is not a prototypical number one wide receiver, I would say. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to do the things Antonio Brown does or Odell does. He's a competent enough number one, but they don't have a number two or number three. They did Conley and Albert Wilson. Albert Wilson's been in and out. Conley's been out. So you have Alex playing with wide receivers who he doesn't have any chemistry with. And as was pointed out to me online, you know, guys are not running the right routes. You know, we'll get into this in a second about people putting up videos of plays. But then, you know, we have guys who play football, Dan Orlovsky, quarterback, saying, look, this guy didn't run the right route. This guy didn't run the right route here. So we have a lot of issues on the offense, mm-hmm. and it's not just as simple as put Pat Mahomes in, he'll solve all your problems.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Mahomes. Obviously, there's issues with the offensive line and with the running game, which we can get to, but you brought up Mahomes, so let me ask you about him. Of course, you know, when they drafted Mahomes, it was possible this was going to happen, where if Alex Smith struggled, there were going to be people who wanted to see Mahomes. Because, of course, a lot of the things Mahomes theoretically will be able to do at the professional level, the things that he was able to do at the college level, are things that Alex Smith just can't do physically. But why isn't it as simple as just saying, well, Pat Mahomes is mobile, we can insert him in this mobile offense, and he's going to be able to make more plays downfield than Alex Smith can?
Well, so the mobility thing is interesting, because there's two types of mobile quarterbacks, right? There's the read option mobile quarterback, right, which I would put Alex in that category. Yep. Alex can run the football. They run a read option. Right. Then there's Aaron Rodgers mobile, who is not going to run a read option, but he's very good in the pocket, right? Like, he knows where he's going. He obviously can break contains. That's what Pat Mahomes is. Pat Mahomes is not read option mobile. He didn't do it in college. He played in the air raid. He's not going to do the NFL. So just from a system-wise, the Chiefs have put together an offense that fits Alex Smith's skill set, mm-hmm. which a lot of that read option stuff, I highlighted that early in the season, which, you know, part of the run game, that has dried up. Teams are figuring it out. You know, after so long, it was going to be figured out eventually. Mm-hmm. So to say that Pat Mahomes can come in and run the same offense is not accurate. Also, Andy Reid's offenses are very complex. There's a lot of route combinations, a lot of combinations based off coverage. You know, you have to read your first, second, third read. If you watch a Chiefs game, just watch the next Chiefs game. They play Sunday against the Jets. Watch how many times Alex Smith is checking a play, giving a thumbs up, which lets everyone know the play's on. Watch how many times he adjusts the protection. Right, that's all things that Pat Mahomes is not going to be able to do right now. Mm-hmm. He was never given a chance in training camp to compete for the job. He took no reps with the ones in practice. I think he took one drive with the ones in the preseason. And since the season started, he's taken all scout team reps. So he's done nothing to prepare himself mentally to play this season. That was by design. They don't want him to play this season. I think the goal is next season to give him the job, mm-hmm. Allow him to have full offseason with the offense. And one last thing I want to address about this, you know, we have a quote from Travis Kelce basically saying that he's been, I think it was unbelievable in practice or phenomenal. Mm-hmm. One of those two.
Sure.
Look, he's doing scout team. Okay. It's off a card. They're telling him, this is where you throw the ball. and I want you to do this and throw it to this guy. Mm-hmm. So there's no consequence in scout team. He can throw the ball as hard, as high, as far, as deep. Hit the guys. It doesn't matter. I bet he looks great in practice because they're like, dude, throw the ball to this guy. He's like, sure. Toss back and boom, nails him. Like that's, I'm sure he looks phenomenal. But that doesn't translate at all the way he's going to do on Sunday. There's a lot of reasons why they're not playing him, and they're not going to play him. Like Chiefs fans, you got to get over it. If you go into week 17 and you're 7 and 8 and whatever the Chargers or Raiders are 9 and 6 and the division's out of hand, maybe you'll play Pat Mahomes. Otherwise, he ain't playing.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense for him to play at this point. The whole plan was to have him play next year, and so you would figure Andy Reid's been around the block for a while. He knows he's not getting fired, even if they go 6-10, if they lose out, which they're not going to do. I mean, it's not going to happen. It's just not their plan at this point. And like you said, there's not really a reason to think that Patrick Mahomes is going to be able to turn things around overnight. Now, one thing I know you don't like, and I also don't like, I find very frustrating when it comes to fans breaking down tape or saying, you know, watch the film, don't look at the box scores, that they will usually take still images and put them on Twitter of open receivers. And why, Jeff, is this a bad way to judge quarterbacks?
Well, it's not even a still. Now we can, you know, by Tuesday, the All 22 is out, and people put up the GIFs and the videos, and they say, look, a guy's open. But you don't take into consideration a lot of things. One, what's the quarterback's read? Maybe that guy's not his first read. Believe it or not, the quarterback might have to look somewhere else before he finds the open wide receiver. Number two, you don't know the coverage. I'll give you a great example. So, and I think Trent Green did Alex a little wrong on this play. It was from Sunday. If you remember, it was 3rd and 6 and in the about the 30-yard line, and Chiefs going to maybe score. And it looked like cover two. And as Alex threw the ball to the guy running a slant or kind of an in route, yep. The safety broke down and made the play, and Travis Kelce ran behind it, right? Mm-hmm. So Alex just got fooled there. He thought it was cover two because teams have been running a lot of cover two on the Chiefs.
Right.
They threw the cover two beater, which was to the soft, which is a slant route, to the soft zone, which everyone does. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you can say, well, he should have hit Kelce later. But the thing you can say is that Alex predetermined his read there, which – good or bad, I don't know. Maybe that's bad, maybe it's not. He just wants to get a first down. So, like, that's not fair to Alex because you're not in that room. And then my favorite thing this week was Dan Orlovsky, the former Leo. I played with him in the Lions, so we communicate often on Twitter. You know, someone tried to put up a clip of someone being open, and Dan's like, they ran the wrong route. Like, there's two guys in the same spot. So Alex got spooked because they're not in the right spot. Even the interception he threw to end the game, Dan said the wide receiver didn't run a crisp route. He's supposed to come back to the ball and come back. Mm-hmm. He rounds it, and as he rounds it, that's where Alex throws the ball. He's supposed to come back, and he throws an interception. So it's just not fair at the quarterback position. Other positions, I think, for offensive linemen, it's pretty easy. Did he block a guy? Did he not? Of course, there's other things that go into that, but it's not fair for the quarterback position to just put up a clip. You know, yeah, I even got an argument today with some people over a throw that he could have thrown, a seam up the middle, cover two, Tampa two, right? So they're running with Kelce. I mean, Alex has done that in the past, but it's not really his best quality, throwing a seam route, in cover two. That's not what he does very well. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, look, Kelce put his arm up. I mean, okay, so, like, it's just all it does is it muddies the picture. And as a fan, I get why you want to do it, and you have access to this film, and you want to show that you know why the offense is not working, but there's like 7 guys on Twitter that are qualified to actually break down quarterback play. I'm not one of them. I wrote them an article. I said, I don't put those up of quarterback play because I'm not qualified. Mm-hmm. I've played NFL 8 years. I learned coverages. I know coverages. I know some route concepts that go with coverages, but I never sat in that quarterback room. I don't pretend to be a quarterback guru. I can tell you at times, what coverages is this, and the ball should have gone there, or maybe it should have. But just like I don't like when quarterbacks that call games point stuff out about offensive linemen that's wrong, I can't turn around and do that to quarterbacks. So I just think it's an exercise that gets nowhere. All it does is bring angst to a fan base without actually knowing the reason why. And here's the thing, too. I don't go along on this, but the last comment, if you're putting that out there, if I correct you, the fans have already seen the bad play. It doesn't mm-hmm. like my correction is just, I don't know why I even bother doing it. The fans have already made their mind up on how they feel about that certain player. Right. And so I get why Chiefs fans, I know, Chiefs fans are like, you've only been a fan for 4 years. You don't know how the suffering is and all this stuff about putting Mahomes. Look, I get it. Alex is not playing well right now. You have to hope this weekend the switch flips back. It's on and the offense is clicking again and the run game is back. But putting up these clips of Alex Smith does no one any good.
Yeah. I mean, I did it with Nathan Peterman to prove a point, not because I think I know the coverages. I obviously don't. But just if you're going to start from the opinion that a quarterback is playing poorly and then you're going to look for plays where there are open receivers to try and find proof that he's playing poorly, my guess is for Tom Brady down, you can find plays for every single quarterback in football where he throws to a guy who is not open relative to other open receivers. It's not, you know, that doesn't mean that they're playing poorly. It just means that they weren't at that point in their progressions. It means that they didn't, you know, that the coverage was such that it required a different throw. He was under pressure or he was playing poorly. But under any circumstance, like, this isn't Madden. You know, you can't look at the opportunities that way and figure, okay, well, I can see the entire field in Madden, so I can assume that Alex Smith can see every possible receiver at every single moment. It just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't pass the smell test when it comes to quarterback play.
One of my favorite ones, too, is I saw one that was 2 weeks ago where they circled a guy who was open, even the right guy who was open. It was on the bottom of the screen. Like it's like that type of stuff, too. Like, you go through, you know, this guy was open. Well, there's a safety 7 yards away. He's not open. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the thing about it is we should know, or Chiefs fans should know, of Alex Smith's limitations, right? He's not going to be a gambler. Maybe that's what you want in Tom Mahomes. You want a guy who's going to throw a bunch of picks. He'll be a Brett Favre, take the chances, but you're also going to you hit some home runs. You want to hit home runs. But Andy Reid has never really been a type of coach who wants a quarterback to take a bunch of risks.
Right.
He's always been a guy, even Donovan McNabb, he didn't take a lot of risks. Maybe Michael Vick did a little bit, but even then, I think Andy Reid kind of reeled him in with as much, you know, taking a risk. He doesn't want that. He wants an efficient offense. The West Coast offense is not about taking risks. It's about efficiency. So, Pat Mahomes will eventually get to that, but if Chiefs fans, if you just think that Andy Reid's going to throw in a quarterback there who can run around and make plays, he ain't doing that. And if you want some other coach, sure, fine. But that's not what Andy Reid's going to do.
Mm-hmm. So given the problems with the Chiefs offense, do you think they're likely to fix it and be, you know, even if they're not the offense from the first 5 weeks of this year, can they be the offense we saw, you know, over the course of the 2016 season? Like, can they still be an effective offense, or are there going to have to be changes during the offseason?
Well, I think they can be. I think the first 5 weeks was probably more fool's gold than we thought. I think we all thought, wow, you know, this is the new Chiefs offense, and they were running those new schemes and whatnot. I think that the staff rightfully feels, look, we'll get back to some semblance of that. I think they can do that. I think a lot comes to confidence. I mean, and I've talked about this a little bit in my article, that they need to change a little bit of their offense. I think they need to spread things out and go a little bit up-tempo, and that will force Alex to throw the ball quickly. And they need to get him in a good rhythm. I mean, they need to find a way to come out in this game on Sunday. It's going to be, you know, they're playing MetLife again, second time in 3 weeks against a good Jets team. You know, they're not good like record, but they're a good team when they play hard and they're going to play physical and fast and they're going to try to win this game. I would like to see them come out and just go tempo really early, get Alex 3, 4, 5 throws early, just back, you know, come out, no huddle, boom, 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 get him some confidence, get him rolling, and work the run game in. I think they can do it. You know, the run game thing, like I said, I think it's a lot more mental than physical. So that's disappointing. You know, they should be able to figure that out. But you're coming to a game this weekend against the Jets where they're going to test you and your protections. They're going to test you and your running. I mean, their defensive front is good. I mean, they gave the Panthers everything the Panthers can handle with their pressure package. So Chiefs are really going to have to be on their game Sunday. I mean, it might be ugly. You know, they might get an ugly win, but they're still a couple ways away from winning, the division. I understand Chargers fans are excited and people talking about the Chargers, and sure, the Chargers, they have a good chance to maybe win the division, but it still runs through Kansas City.
Yeah, they're still the huge favorites to win the division, especially given that their schedule over the final five games includes the Jets, the Raiders, the Dolphins, and the Broncos. Three of those five games, by the way, are at home. Let me finish up with this. I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't ask you in terms of what happened yesterday with the Giants and Eli Manning, of course, benching Eli Manning through what appeared to be a press release. Any thoughts on the decision, how it was handled, and Eli Manning's future in the NFL?
Well, it didn't happen through a press release. It's not you didn't misinterpret that. I think that's a lot of the problem, and that's why people are upset, is because it should have been done in a more professional manner. Mm-hmm. It should have been done. I think it should have been done with a press conference with Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese and even John Mara, possibly. I know he was busy yesterday, so he wasn't there at the facility. And with Eli Manning and getting up and explaining the situation, giving him his proper due. You know, it feels like just another guy who's getting benched, or they sent out a press release same as they would when they cut me, right? And we're obviously not in the same stratosphere as far as Giants legends.
Right.
He's met a lot of the organization. He's won 2 Super Bowls. He's carried himself with the utmost of class and professionalism and work ethic and commitment to being on the field every week. And it just feels like they're just throwing him away casually. And I like that Eli said, you're either in or you're out with me. I love that about Eli. I think it was a good decision on his call to basically call him out and say, look, dudes, you're either in or you're out. And I think that people are upset because they're going to Geno Smith instead of Davis Webb. And for the same reasons that I said Pat Mahomes shouldn't play, I think Davis Webb's in the same boat. You know, I understand why Geno is first on the depth chart, because Davis Webb was fourth string in training camp. Fourth string. So he prepared 0% for the season. And so I understand why they're not going to him right now. I think eventually he'll get more reps and stuff. But even today it was reported that he didn't take any reps with the one offense. It was all really? Eli Manning and Geno Smith. They might not address him. And another insulting thing to me is that Eli's going to be second string. Like, he's like some bum quarterback who's the second. Like, they're still going to address him. So, he can easily just go in the game on Sunday if Geno gets hurt or if they're struggling. I just think it's not fair to Eli. So, I get why they did it, but I don't like the way they did it. And it feels very casual. And there's many reasons why I think John Mara and Steve Tisch agree, the owners agreed to this. I think there's two schools of thought. One is that they're kind of letting the coaches fire themselves by this decision. And I like that the Giants ownership, though, in general, stays out of a lot of coaching decisions. They've always done that. I like that about them. They're hands-on, but they're not, essentially. And two, maybe this is a sign of confidence for McAdoo and Jerry Reese that they'll be back next season. If they can figure this out, and let's say they win 3 of 5, they beat Dallas at home, they pull off an upset, against the Eagles, or they beat the Redskins in Week 17, so they win 2 more division games this year. Who knows that McAdoo will be gone or not? So I think you can look at it, one of those two ways.
So very quickly, first team that comes to mind for you, where is Eli Manning playing Week 1 of 2018, or is he playing at all?
Well, he's playing. I think a lot depends on what the Chiefs do with Alex Smith. I mean, I think if Coughlin would prefer Eli, I think, in Jacksonville. I know people have thrown out Denver as a possible place for Eli Manning. Does John Elway really want to do that again? I mean, I feel like he would admit that he's now failed with basically 3 draft picks, which is Brock, and I know he was a late draft pick, and so was Simeon, and Lynch was a first-round pick. So you basically have now just said you failed on all these guys you've drafted. I don't know if he wants to do that route again. And then Arizona. I think Arizona, the way they play offense, would fit Eli Manning. Eli was successful in a basically a take-chances offense, right? He chucked the ball deep a lot when he was younger, and Joe Biden's offense, run the ball and throw it deep, and that's what Bruce Arians does. I think that would be an interesting matchup for him. So I think, Jacksonville, Arizona, or Denver. I think schematically probably Arizona, but I think if Tom Coughlin were to call, he'd go to Jacksonville.
Interesting. Well, Jeff, thank you so much. Where can people check out more of your work?
Really, like you said, you just go to my Twitter. It's at Jeff Schwartz with a G, GEOFFSCHWARTZ. I do the locker room on ESPN Radio, Sirius XM NFL Radio, Saturday nights. I do some Fox Sports Radio. I write for SB Nation, do videos, do a lot of fun stuff. You can catch it all on my Twitter page.
The Renaissance man himself, Jeff Schwartz, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, take care.
All right, thanks so much to our guests again today, Doug Kide of Nesson and Jeff Schwartz of SB Nation and pretty much everywhere else on the internet. More Nickel Package coming tomorrow. Mina Kimes and Dominique Foxworth will be with you. But until then, thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to The Nickel Package. For more from Bill Barnwell, listen and subscribe to The Bill Barnwell Show, available in the ESPN app and in Apple Podcasts. The Nickel Package.